Welcome back to 90 Feet Away. As you know, we're at Game on 13, so if you hear some baseballs being hit in the background, that's just normally what we do here. Don't worry, there are no bombs going off. I have told you several times that this podcast is not just about baseball, softball. I want to touch on so many different subjects that we deal with on a daily basis, and today I'm joined by an incredible athlete who has nothing to do with baseball and softball. I met this young lady. She's the most unassuming young lady I've ever met in my life. She used to work out here at my facility when she was spending a lot of time in New York. One day she came in just to say good morning and pet my dog, Samson, who's the coolest animal on the planet. And we were just talking, and you know, what'd you do this weekend? And I said, I went upstate, did some fun stuff with my kids. After talking to her about what I did this weekend, I said, hey, what'd you do? And she said, oh, I was just playing tennis in Queens. I go, tennis in Queens? She goes, yeah, USTA. Today I have the honor and privilege of welcoming one of my favorite people in this world, Jamie Loeb. Jamie, live from Slovenia, thank you for spending some time with us today.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you for that grand introduction. It is a pleasure to be joining you from all the way from Slovenia.
So this is so crazy for me. As I've gotten to know you and really fall in love with you and the person and your journey, I want to start with the girl next door. The local Ossining kid who started, you know, messing around probably at Club Fit or one of the local places, learning tennis and learning how to fall in love with tennis, and how that girl from Ossining ends up in Slovenia. How did your journey start, Jane?
Well, buckle up. It's a wild story. I'll try to keep it brief, but I started playing tennis when I was 3 years old at Club Fit, youngest of four. All my siblings played, my mom played, and they all actually took lessons at Club Fit. And honestly, I was playing tennis before I could even walk. My brothers put me on the ping pong table and got that hand-eye coordination going from a young age. And I am now 29 years old. There's a big gap in between, but fast forward a bit. And here I am in Slovenia, competing on the WTA Tour. And I'm playing a tournament on Sunday here. And I've been on the tour since I was 20. So the past 9 years have been grinding it out. But yeah, I went from this little girl that just didn't have a care in the world and, you know, fell in love with this sport to making it my career, my passion, and my profession, and has led me to some really cool and unique places.
You start out at Briarcliff. You go to Ossining High School. I don't know that, you know, Ossining High School is known for their tennis players, other than the Loeb family. At what point did you really, or your family really think you were special? And then what? Like, what happens from Club Fit? What happens from Ossining into, you know, the juniors? And how does that kind of start for you?
Yeah, so my sister actually won the state championship 3 times. For Ossining High School, and I won it once my sophomore year. So the Loebs have been dominant, you know, in the Ossining tennis, you know, record books. Yeah, I think, you know, from a young age, I definitely had some talents, and, you know, I played my first tournament when I was 8 years old. Made a lot of sacrifices as a young kid too, just on weekends I was playing tournaments, missing sleepovers, missing birthday parties. And I knew it was a commitment, and I knew I had something special, and my parents saw that, my coach at the time saw that. And, you know, we actually made a decision after my sophomore year in high school, in Ossining High School, to do online school. so I can travel more. And that was a tough decision because as a teenager, you know, figuring out your social life and your friends, like I already was making sacrifices, but I knew I wanted to take my tennis to the next level and travel more and travel internationally. So that was the best decision for me and for my tennis. So I made that sacrifice. I was actually doing a lot of my training up in Brewster. So my mom would drive me every day to practice at the Hardscrabble Club, actually. And until I was like 14, and then I started training at the USTA in Queens for, I believe, a year. And then when I was around 15, 16, I started training at the John McEnroe Tennis Academy at Randall's Island. So once again, a lot of commuting and commitment, you know, from my parents to do this and be able to do this and give me this opportunity to, you know, get my tennis to the next level. And then I had the option to turn pro at 18, but as a family, we came together and, you know, we all believe in education and thought that it was right for me to go to school for at least a year. And I ended up going to the University of North Carolina, the best decision of my life. And I played 2 years there, won the NCAA singles championship my sophomore year, and then started my professional career when I was 20 years old.
You and the amount of energy you have, you jumped like way beyond. I wasn't even up to that yet, Jamie Lowe, but I love you. We are homeschooled. We talk a lot about mental health. You spoke about something that hits so hard, and I believe especially for young women, the sacrifice. And I'm not even talking about being a professional yet. We'll talk about that later. The sacrifice of giving up a social life, giving up parties, giving up sleepovers to make sure that I was sleeping and recovering and eating correctly, because you had goals. You had goals and aspirations of doing something special. How did the recruiting process go for you? See, I know nothing about the recruiting in tennis. I could tell you everything about baseball, softball, but how did that go, and how did you end up being a UNC Tar Heel kid?
Yeah, I mean, I think once again, from a young age, I've always been driven and passionate and disciplined, and I was okay with those sacrifices, but it has to come from the kid. And it really can't come from the parents. And I think once my parents saw that I was willing to make these sacrifices and do online school, they're like, okay. But, you know, I was never forced to do it. And I, you know, I'm glad I made those choices. And looking back, those were the right decisions for me. And yeah, tennis is different than baseball. But I will say I did get recruiting letters. I remember starting in middle school, actually. Sometimes I would get handwritten notes from colleges. I think I remember one exactly, I think it was in like science class or something. And they like brought me a letter from like UCLA. I don't know why it was sent to my school. I don't know how it got there, but I did get offers from all over the country. I was a top player, from the 12 and under, 14 and under, 16 under, 18 and under, you know, throughout my entire junior career. So that definitely helped me. And a lot of the tournaments I was playing, the national level events, you get seen by the coaches. So I did have a lot of options. I personally didn't want to go too far away from home. I didn't want to be on the West Coast. So I ruled out, you know, Stanford, UCLA, USC, Cal. You know, I just didn't want to be that far away. And UNC was such a great fit for me. I actually didn't have a dream school. I didn't know where I wanted to go. And they actually didn't know I was interested until my sister reached out to the assistant coach at the time, who they were actually really good friends, and spent a recruiting trip together, actually. So My sister helped me through the process because she played college tennis at Wake Forest and she knew the coaches and just helped me through that. And I took a visit to UNC and I fell in love with the school, the coaches, the girls on the team, the environment. It was just such a welcoming and supportive environment. And it just felt like home to me. And it still is home to me.
You know, listening to those schools that you listed, if anyone got an opportunity to play at any of those schools, like, that's just off the charts amazing. To have that many schools of that caliber, because now we're not just talking about tennis. We're talking about high academic and tennis, the best schools in the country. Did you take that for granted going through it? Like, did you just, you know, yeah, this is normal for everyone? Or did you pinch yourself and say, wow, this is really special. I must be pretty good at this game.
At the time, I probably took it for granted. I think it'd be interesting to hear about baseball, but with tennis, I think a lot of times we normalize the lifestyle, we normalize things that just happen. And as a young junior, I think like I knew I was going to be getting some of those offers. But looking back, like that's really awesome that, you know, I had those options and those schools, you know, were very interested in me and wanted me, and, you know, kids would die to go to those schools. So at the time, I don't think I understood what it really meant, to be honest. But now looking back, I'm like, wow, like that's pretty cool.
What's even cooler to me about the family, the UNC family. You spent 2 years at UNC, and, you know, the latest on Jamie Loeb when she's in the continental United States is that you are residing in North Carolina, and you still use North Carolina to train, and the coaches are still there helping you. Is that normal? You know, again, I think in baseball and softball, they love hearing from alumni, but it's not the type of thing where athletes go back to train and they feel welcomed by the entire staff there. Is that normal, Jane?
I don't think it is. Maybe a little bit more with tennis, but I think it just speaks to the relationships that I've built at Carolina and the people there and just how supportive they've been with me throughout my career from when I stepped foot on campus to now being on tour, and I can basically pick up where I left off. I have spoken to other players on tour that have gone to college, and I really do think my experience is very unique because I haven't found anyone that has had this much attachment to their university after all these years. And yeah, I am residing there. I'm, you know, working with the coaches and hitting with the men's team and women's team when I'm in town. And I can literally just show up and work out in the athletic gym. And I know so many, there's still so many familiar faces where for me, it's nostalgic, but it's like, I don't know. It's like, I'm picking up where I left off. But yeah, I'm very grateful to have that opportunity and to have just incredible resources and facilities at UNC, because not all colleges have that. And yeah, it is really special. So I'm grateful for that.
Well, it's special. You're special. We talk a lot about on this show, Jame, about mental health, dealing with adversity, overcoming failure and learning from mistakes that I've made. Only because I've gotten to know you in the last few years, this isn't like the sexiest journey, right? Like, people think, wow, I'm you know, top player in the world. I mean, you're not ranked 3, but, you know, you got up to like top 100 in the world. Top 100 in the world at anything is amazing. But this isn't, you know, roses and champagne every day. It's a struggle. It's a grind. I'm talking to you live from Slovenia, playing in a WTA tournament. You're not in Palm Beach. I mean, what are the things that are toughest for you on a day-to-day basis? Obviously, other than being away from your family, what are the things that people don't know that Jamie Loeb, not only as an athlete, but Jamie Loeb as a human being, has to deal with?
Get ready for this answer. Well, first, I was close to top 100. I will be top 100, but I was close. And the tournament in Slovenia is an ITF, which this is the tricky part with tennis. We have WTA, ITF that are, it's counted for the same ranking system, but you would think of WTA as like major leagues and ITF as minor leagues, or even sometimes well below that. But yeah, it's not all rainbows and butterflies. You know, for example, yesterday I took an 8-hour bus ride from Czech Republic to Slovenia, and two countries don't speak the language. It's a long journey. I have to figure out logistics. I'm constantly figuring out, okay, what is the most cost effective? What is the most convenient? And most of the time, those things don't go hand in hand. And while a lot of people might think that I have a travel agent and people sorting out my schedule and practices, I don't. I'm booking my flights. I'm booking my trips. I do have coaches I talk to about my schedule, but at the end of the day, I'm the one making it and seeing what I can afford, because another difference with tennis is that you have to pay for all your expenses and the prize money isn't great. So also perspective, in Czech Republic last week, it was an ITF 75. 75 stands for the amount of points that the winner gets. I lost last round of qualifying. I lost first round of doubles, and I got 247 euros, which doesn't cover my hotel, my flight. You don't want to know how much that was. So that part is really stressful, and it becomes difficult doing that on your own, but I've gotten so used to having to deal with the uncertainty and the chaos of logistics and travel, money, budget. I'm alone, by the way. I'm here. I'm playing another tournament in Slovenia next week by myself. So finding friends on tour is really important, but at the end of the day, they're your opponents. They're your competition. So it's a tricky balance sometimes, and but it definitely gets lonely. And I wish I had a coach here. I wish I could afford a coach here. But a lot of the times I do travel by myself, so people don't realize how tough that can get mentally and emotionally and physically, just on a day-to-day basis, especially when you are so far away from home.
Thank you for sharing that. That, to me, everybody assumes, right? We have Team Loeb. Who's handling logistics? Who's handling the itinerary? Just kind of like telling you where to show up. That couldn't be further from the truth. This is a professional athlete. I want the whole audience to hear this. This is a professional athlete by herself in a foreign country, 8-hour bus rides, and she made 247 euros for the week. How do you keep positive, kid? Because at times, I mean, I you're doing well, and I played really, really well, but then I didn't qualify. And it's not just for you, the mental part of what did I do wrong in my game. Now you're also your own business manager, and I didn't make enough money. What's my budget like going forward and next trip? And how hard is it for you to grab some sponsors along the way? Because I have to assume that would take some of the pressure off of what you're doing on a daily basis.
These are the things that people don't see behind the scenes, and it's tough. It is tough. Honestly, playing tennis is probably the easiest part out of all of this. I even go back to my junior days, my collegiate days, and even like early on playing on the pro tour, where I had everything set up for me and I would just have to show up. I didn't know anything about money. I didn't have to worry about money and how I'm going to get to places. It was laid out. And that is just not the case once you make this a profession. And when you don't have the means to have a team around you, it, you know, you have to be your best friend out there. And there's days like yesterday where I was sitting in the car and I'm like, why am I doing this? Like, why am I taking this 8-hour bus? Like, what is the point of this? And so there's moments of doubt and I'm like, look, I believe in myself. I've overcome all of my toughest days. There's been many breakdowns, many tears, but I've proven to myself time and time again how strong I am, and I very much have to lean on that and, you know, really lean into myself and my trust and my abilities and my strength when I am by myself. And it is really hard thinking about money, but it's honestly a thought that crosses my mind pretty much every day. Like, literally to the point where each meal that I'm eating, I'm like doing calculations, and it's really hard to shut off the brain when you just don't have the resources. Like, I don't have a sponsor at the moment. And tennis is an interesting sport where, you know, sometimes there's benefactors and donors that just, you know, really love the sport and really want you to succeed and will give you money. Sometimes it comes from clothing deals or racket deals or, you know, patch deals, things like that, where, you know, you have that income, but right now I don't. And it also is tough at this level where you're not making anything really to break even. And the money is at the Grand Slams, but how do you get there? By playing these tournaments and building your ranking so you can get to a point where you're playing the slam. So it's like a catch 22 is like, will the money, like having money relieve you and, you know, you start having results, or you have results and get money. And this is like the back and forth that I've been battling, you know, the past couple of years.
So first and foremost, Jame, I just want to say this to the audience. If there's anybody out there that wants to help Jamie, contact me at ericgameon13 at Gmail, and I will put you in contact, because she's just an incredible young lady. For me, having coached at pretty good levels, what you deal with on a daily basis is really incredible to me. You know, even coaching in the Olympics, everything was pretty much done. All I had to do was set up a practice plan, figure out a lineup, but, you know, like airfare and where we were staying, the Olympic Village, meals, all that stuff was done for us. Team Loeb right now is one. It's you. Who do you rely on, Jame, when things are going bad and I'm having just a brutal day? Obviously, you know, mom and dad have to be up on that list, but like, how do you get through the tough stuff? How do you get through the breakdowns and the tears? You know, it's not like you're in North Carolina, you're in Slovenia. Like, I have a tough day. What am I doing to prepare myself for tomorrow, kid?
Yeah, I think, you know, the other thing that I'm really grateful for is that I have such a great support team all over, honestly, the world. You know, two of the most important coaches in my entire career, I talk to them all the time. One is in New York, one is in Florida, and they both still follow my matches. When I'm home or in the area, I'll go and practice with them. They've always been so loyal to me, and I've been loyal to them. And, you know, it's hard to find that, honestly, in this profession, you know, coaches that have known you since you were 8 years old, since you were 15 years old, and have seen you grow up. So I bounce ideas off of them. The only thing is they don't get to see me play much. And it's a difference, you know, watching this, being on court and practice versus matches, just these different environments. So that's, tough. I have my base in North Carolina, which I talked to, you know, some of the coaches there. And then I have a base in Argentina. Plot twist, I did my preseason there, and that was probably the best decision for me. Very spontaneous, but I have a fitness team there, and they send me programs. They've been checking in with me. I actually had one of the coaches come with me 2 weeks in Mexico, and I actually won a tournament. And I know I was the one to actually do it, but I had such great routines, and just having someone there, it was so helpful and so reassuring. So that was really nice. But I just try to remember that I do have people that care about me, and I know I can do it, but it just would be nice to have some pressure taken off of me, and just in any regard, really.
Mental health, keeping yourself strong. To be good at anything, I need to have a tremendous amount of confidence. I need to believe in myself. There are days that I'm sorry, I just don't. And I may shoot myself in a tournament and not play well. I may have a lead and blow the lead, late in a match. What motivates you? Do you have a mental health coach? I mean, you and I have kidded around since we've known each other that I'm kind of tough on you myself from time to time. But what do you do regularly as part of your routine, Jame?
So I do have a psychologist. She's incredible, and she's helped me so much. And I think it's really important. And that's something that, you know, I get, like, I tell everyone, I'm like, everyone should have a therapist. Everyone needs someone. Everyone needs someone to, you know, help you create like good behaviors for yourself. I just think I've learned a lot being by myself so much that I've had no other option but to just figure it out. And there's so many days where I'm like, F this, like, I just don't want to be here right now, or I miss a shot and I'm like pissed for like the next 10 minutes. And it's so easy to kind of get down that rabbit hole. And sometimes I'll beat myself up for having those moments, but honestly, you can't be on all the damn time. Like, it is so exhausting. And, you know, fake it till you make it, whatever you want to say, like, yes, you can, but you also have to allow yourself to feel shitty and not great. And maybe sometimes, you know what, I gotta cut this practice short. Like, I'm not being, you know, I've kind of checked out, and maybe I'll be more productive doing something else. And I think that's one thing I've learned as I've gotten older, instead of just like pushing, which I do, but it comes to a point where like, am I productive anymore? Like, why don't I go do something that's going to make me happy? Because I'm my best self when I'm happy. And whether that's, you know, me roaming the streets of this cute little town in Slovenia and walking down the cobblestone streets, or watching Netflix, or, you know, getting my nails done, like, at the end of the day, I need to be happy. And also when I'm on court, like, I need to do things that are going to set me up for success. So sometimes taking a step back is the way. And then sometimes I have to be like, no, Jamie, we're going to figure this out. We're going to dive deep into it. But it's all about understanding yourself and what you need in that moment. And I think I've done a really good job throughout the years to understand what I need in some moments and how to help myself at some of the weakest and toughest times.
I got to ask you, you know, I really don't want to blow up your spot, but are there any really good dance classes in Slovenia? Because, you know, we haven't talked about how you just love getting down. A lot of your downtime is spent in rando dance classes all over the world. Is, you know, again, you're talking about, as a coach, yes, having fun, it's really important, but you're also expending a lot of energy getting through those classes. Is that really, A, I like it, or B, it's just kind of to get my mind off other stuff?
I cannot stop laughing. So dance, that is my happy place. And I was walking down the street today and I saw something for ballet, but I will not cross that line. I quit ballet when I was 5 years old. I love my hip hop classes. When I was in Argentina, I took tango. It's just like the one place where I don't judge myself. I'm not critical. I move my body. I honestly feel so confident. I know you always give me shit about, you know, doing the stanky leg and twerking and all that, but it makes me happy. And I just like, I don't care about anything else. I don't care who else is there. Like, I'm just doing my thing and I have so much fun. It is a passion of mine. In my next life, I'll be on Dancing with the Stars. But I'll let you know once I find a hip hop studio here in Slovenia.
I may bust your chops a little bit, but truly, it's such an incredible outlet for you because I do know how much you love it. The father and the coach in me gets worried when I see you getting down with your bad self that you're going to roll an ankle and you know, not be able to play tennis. But those are the things that here we are, a 9-year professional tennis player, and those are still the things that make you happiest. And it's so important to find those things, right? I talk to kids all the time. I don't want them playing video games, whatever. You know, they do that too much. But finding something physical, right, that you don't have to think. You can just be yourself. To me, it's you know, it's so important in your journey while I'm alone, while I have no friends or family with me. I think that's really cool. You know, one thing you touched on earlier, and it's so crazy. You get to know these other players from the time you're a junior. And yes, there's no question they're your friends. You've grown up together. They're your friends. How easy is it for you to flip the switch and want to go for their juggler when you're playing against them on the court?
That is one of the hardest things for me to do. And I was actually talking about this last week with one of my close friends who we were actually sharing a room in Czech Republic together, which is also very common to share rooms with other girls in the tournament to save money, which I will be sharing my room this week with another girl. But it is so difficult because someone like myself, I'm really intense and feisty on the court. I'm loud. That's just how I play my best tennis. And it's tricky when you play someone that you're really close with, because you don't want to come off as like a bitch. And on the women's side, it could also be a little bit like more personal. On the men's side, guys tend to just brush it off. So it is really tough. And I've had to do that many of times. And at the end of the day, I think as I've gotten older, I'm like, look, this is you. And this is your career. This is their career. Like, we all want to win. And unfortunately, like, you know, you got to put the friendship aside and afterwards, you know, hug it out and that's it. It's so weird. It's so interesting. I think it's pretty unique with tennis because I don't think you really get that with any other sport.
It's interesting, Jane. You know, I've played, which is what put me in this position of full knee replacement, full hip replacement. And yes, I still plan to be playing next month when the season starts. But my best friends are my best friends. When we get on the field, I wish death upon his entire family. For me, it's the only way to compete and be a competitor. You talked about hugging it out. He's my best friend. I'm going to give you, for instance, a couple years ago playing baseball, I hit a line drive off the pitcher's ribs. The pitcher's one of my best friends. The next time up, he hit me with a pitch. We were both able to separate our friendship. And I'm telling you, we were on different teams. We drove to the field together, and we drove home together, which is kind of weird when you're not on the same team. But during the game, it's me or you. It's life or death. And if we are competing for the same piece of meat, I'm hungrier. That's pretty interesting. What is next for my 29-year-old bestie hanging out in Europe? How long are you staying out there? When are you coming home? How long does this journey take you? When do you decide, I want to make a living now, but differently? I want to be a coach. I want to help the next generation. Because that's what happens to every athlete, right? I have learned so much, and I can now help the next generation. I can warn them. I can prepare them. Is that going through your mind yet at 29, or you got another 10 years of this? Where are we at?
Well, you know me. There's always thoughts going through my mind. I can never shut my mind off. But first, I'm playing this tournament here that starts on Sunday. And then there's another one in Slovenia next week. And honestly, from there, I'm not sure. Also, another sacrifice. One of my best friends is getting married March 30th. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make the wedding. And like I tell most people, like, it just depends. Like, where are you going to be this week? It depends. It depends. And that's unfortunately, like, what it's coming down to. Like, I don't know if I'm going to be there. There's also a chance that after next week, I could be in Bogota, Colombia, because there's a huge tournament there. And I might get into that. I mean, it's outdoor red clay altitude, and I'm an indoor cold hard court. So not really the best preparation, and I don't really know how that's going to go, but that's an option. So I can either in a couple weeks either be back in the US or in Colombia. I'll get back to you in a couple weeks on that. And then regarding, you know, life after tennis and where I see myself, you know, I think a lot of this depends on the financial resources, because if I'm still really struggling, it's not fun. It's not fun to do this when you're constantly, you know, looking at expenses and, you know, doing schedule A through Z, seeing what's the most cost effective, and it may not be the best for your career, or the travel. And, you know, as I've gotten older, like, the travel becomes harder. It doesn't become any easier. So there's a lot of things I have to factor. I mean, as far as my talent, I know I have it and it's still there. You know, knock on wood, I've been feeling good physically for the past couple of years. That's been up and down. But, you know, since the summer, I've been feeling really good. And, you know, my body's allowed me to play. And, you know, I still have a lot left in the tank. So I don't have an exact expiration on my career, but, you know, like you said, I definitely want to help the younger generation. I do have a little bit of a consulting business that, like, I've kind of started, but I need kind of business help with that, to just help the younger generation kind of with the transitions from junior tennis to college tennis and college tennis to professional tennis. Because I feel growing up, yes, I had my sister, but someone that has went through those stages. And having that female voice and female presence, I think, is really important. So I would definitely love to, you know, to target younger girls and really help them through the transition, because it's tough. I mean, I'm still figuring it out. I'm 29, and each day presents me with a different challenge. And just when I thought I've seen it all, you know, an 8-hour bus ride, like, through three countries, I didn't think I'd be doing that. So yeah, I definitely have ambitions. You know, I would love to do some commentating. I would love to coach at UNC. I think that'd be the only college coach I would ever coach at. Yeah, there's options. But right now, I still want to give it all on court and, you know, make little Jamie proud. You know, I've put so much time and effort into this sport, into this career that I know I have a lot more left. It would just be nice if some of these big stressors could just be alleviated in some ways. But, you know, it's pretty remarkable how I'm still having some success while battling through all this on a daily basis.
It's remarkable to me that you are able to perform while handling everything else. One last time, I'm going to say, if anyone is interested in getting involved with Jamie Loeb and helping her through her journey, contact me at ericgamon13@gmail.com. For me, I kind of feel like things don't happen by accident. Thrilled and blessed that you walked in my door here a few years ago and I got to know you. I love the time we get to share together, the DMing back and forth via, you know, text or Instagram. I always wish you nothing but the very best in everything you do. You have a huge fan, even though I'm not a great big tennis fan, I'm a big Jamie Loeb fan. And I truly, truly, I watch everything you put up and I try to follow all your tournaments, even these crazy ones out in Europe. But thank you for spending some time with me today. I love you. You know I love you. And to the audience, thank you for being here and spending some time on 90 Feet Away. Please go out, subscribe, tell your friends about it. Here we go. My first non-baseball softball guest through her incredible journey through tennis and life. And thank you for being here. We'll see you real soon.